most of you probably know, I'm involved with the Survey of California's Beetles, a massive project trying to document as much species diversity within the state as I can. And Tenebrionids are a big part of this. As you know, Western North America is really a big region for this group, and they're very poorly known still, so there's a lot of problems to work out. So this is really something that I've had to try to come to terms with over the last couple years, just figuring out what species are here and learning how to identify them. So it was a good opportunity for me to kind of get up to speed on a difficult group. There are some other appropriate things. We're very near the home of Frank Blaisdell, who's one of the great Tenebrionid specialists. Did a lot of work on San Diego County Tenebrionids, as well as things throughout North America. And many of you probably don't know that I was a graduate student of John Doyon's, and I was in fact his last graduate student before he retired. I was really acutely aware that he had never really had a Tenebrionid specialist come out of his lab. And there was a little bit of pressure early on to maybe do something in that realm, but not a lot. John was, you know, a very accommodating guy. But I left there feeling kind of guilty, and maybe this is some kind of a small atonement for not having gone in that direction. So I don't know. If any of you see John, please tell him that I gave this talk, and maybe he'll feel like, you know, his efforts weren't completely wasted. So for this talk, really my main goal is to try to teach you all, the specialists, something about Tenebrionids that you don't already know. I'm going to go into some details on phylogeographic work that we've been doing on a couple of species in California. And after that obligatory rigor, I'm going to go on to more of a taxonomic overview of California's Tenebrionids. And I was basically ordered by our organizers to show you a lot of nice pictures. So we have that as well. So I'm going to start by describing our area of interest right now. I'm currently funded to work on diversity within the transverse ranges primarily. And this is an east-west running range in Southern California, area of real high topographic diversity, environmental diversity. Out here on the eastern end of these mountains, you're really getting into desert. So this is all Mojave Desert here, Colorado Desert coming up from the southeast. And you see a lot of those elements sort of starting to penetrate into the transverse ranges there. As you come towards the west, obviously there are a lot of coastal habitats at the lower elevations. And in the northwestern regions, you're really seeing the southernmost extent of a lot of cool, moist forest influence from the north. So we have things like madrone here, which is really kind of a more typical north coastal tree. And it wasn't too many thousands of years ago that we had redwoods growing along this part of the coast. So we have vestiges of a really distinct, cooler fauna there. So seeing how all these elements were kind of interdigitating was one of my main interests here. Unfortunately, these mountains picked a very bad place to be. They encircle the LA Basin here, which at last count was something like 16 million people strong and growing. So there's a lot of development pressure up into these mountains. And even aside from development, there's a lot of recreation going on in these mountains. People like to play with very destructive toys like fire and off-road vehicles. And although there's still a remarkable amount of wilderness in this area, it's increasingly impacted by all these outside forces. There are a lot of pollution issues, invasive plant issues, and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of diversity there and a lot of pressure. So we really wanted to get in here and figure out what there is and hopefully try to promote the understanding of diversity in these areas for conservation reasons. And really, there are a lot of agencies that are interested in understanding more about what's here and using that to help protect the area. So that's really a major goal of all that we're doing, both on the diversity side and the genetic side. So this area has attracted a lot of interest in the past from systematists and biogeographers. A study a few years back by Ryan Kalsbeek tried to pull together all of the interest-specific studies that had been done on all kinds of organisms throughout the California Floristic Province, and repeatedly found this break in genetic lineages within species across the transverse ranges. So most groups that he looked at, not all, but the majority were showing very distinct northern and southern groups across the transverse ranges. So clearly there's something going on here. I always felt like this was a very simplistic approach, or at least an inference from this, because it is a very complex range and there's clearly stuff going on within it that pertain to this very, you know, too clean break that he reconstructed. So we wanted to look at this in a lot more detail. And I'm sorry, I'm showing a staphylinoform. I couldn't avoid it. But One of the first species that we worked through phylogeographically was this rove beetle, Cepedophilus castaneus. And we sampled very densely across the transverse ranges and some outlying areas and found some very beautiful phylogeographic structure with regions really coming out quite distinct from one another. And we found this major break between the southeastern transverse ranges, the San Gabriel, San Bernardinos, and San Jacintos over here, from essentially everything to the north, this larger clade. And so separated right between the San Gabriels and this little range in here we call the Sierra Pelona. And even though we had sampling sites that were 30 kilometers apart, there appeared to be no contact across that break. So this was really nice, much more detailed perspective on what might be going on in this area. So this was a great start, and we wanted to continue looking at this with other species. So a couple of tenebrionids have been playing a role in this work. Tenebrionids are actually a very appealing group for phylogeography because so many of them are flightless. You would expect that they're going to show a lot more site specificity and genetic structure. One of these that we've looked at is Nyctoporus carinata. This is a very unusual thing. The genus is an endemic out here. It's kind of a woodland species, but really occurs in a lot of different environments from sea level on up well into the mountains, over 7,000 feet. An epigeic is just a surface active thing. You find it out wandering around on the surface of the soil at night. And I was glad to learn from my Greek-speaking co-author that Nyctoporus means the night walker, which I think is a really nice common name. So I'll probably be referring to them as that from here on. Coelus ciliatus is quite different in habitats. This is a coastal species, just found in sandy soils. There are a few isolated inland populations or potentially endemic species of this thing that seem to have gotten just left behind when seas receded, but they do mainly occur underground. Again, they're both flightless, and there had been some studies of morphological variations showing that there's some geographic pattern even in morphology here, so that was a good signal that they'd be worth looking at. So the methods for this sort of work, this is fairly standard. Dense sampling is really critical to being able to tease apart these area relationships. We sequence just mitochondrial DNA at this point, which is a standard for this sort of work with good reason. We've built trees many, many different ways, and I'm not going to go through all those. And we've been doing a lot of more population genetic statistical analyses as well. I'm not going to get into that here. So for Nyctoporus, we sampled 119 individuals, again, very densely across the transverse ranges and some outlying areas. And this is a large part of the range of this species. There are probably some more populations down here that we didn't get. But as you get further north, you're starting to get into some other, at least nominate, species. And that's true of these Sierran ones here as well, which I'll come back to. So this is a Bayesian tree, and we've got some posterior probabilities on the branches. And this actually shows a very nice picture as well. We have very deep divergences between very well geographically defined clades. And we were blown away by the amount of diversity in this group. So out of our 119 samples, 92 distinct haplotypes. So nearly every individual that we sequenced was different. And probably with enough sequence, you would find that, which doesn't seem possible. But these were as different as 11% from each other, which is really not allowed for single species. We don't really have a good metric for that, but it seems pretty clear that there's more than one thing here, or at least that they're really not in contact with each other from region to region. I'm not going to go into great detail trying to tease apart all these area relationships, but we do see here the Sierran populations are really quite distinct from everything in the coast and transverse ranges, and then our most basal clades here are actually the southernmost, or the northernmost and the southernmost. So they seem to have gotten split apart very early on and then kind of maybe filled in this middle region. You probably noticed this little N. van Dyckei question mark down here. This is that Sierran population that we found up here, which was named by Blaisdell and really is a distinct looking thing. It's a lot narrower and a little bit more refined looking than typical carinata. So at first we thought, okay, well that might actually be something good, but we can see that it's paraphyletic with respect to some Tehachapi real obvious carinata. So it's not that clear cut, and we've definitely still got some work to do on this thing. But it's certainly showing that there is a lot more diversity in this region than we would have guessed. So with Coelus, John Doyon had looked at this thing back in the 70s and early 80s, and did some morphometric work and really showed that there were major discontinuities morphologically along the California coast, appearing to break somewhere near Point Conception, which I'll show you on a map in a minute. But this is essentially the westernmost end of our transverse ranges. So this seemed to maybe correspond to some of the breaks that we're seeing in other things. And it would be very interesting to see if these coastal species were responding to some of the same factors that inland ones were. And we're also interested in looking because there's another species of Coelus with essentially the same overall range that's much more rare. And the state of California has become interested in this, and really any projects that involve coastal areas are required to look for Coelus globosus now and try to determine what the population status is. So we're hoping that by maybe understanding relationships in Ciliatus, some of that might pertain to globosus, which you wouldn't want to go out and sample this intensively. So for Ciliatus, our sampling encompassed really the entire range of the Southern California coast, and we have a few other samples from further north and a little bit further south that I'm not going to talk about here, but we have been looking at this a little bit more broadly. So San Diego's just right down here, Santa Barbara's right here, and Point Conception is this point right out at the western end of the transverse ranges. So we wanted to see if there was a break that corresponded to that. And we did find pretty good divergences in this group, not quite as deep as we found in Nyctoporus, up to almost 6% distinct P distances, not quite as much overall diversity in terms of number of haplotypes, but we did see a nice deep genetic break between some northern things and some southern things. But this doesn't really correspond to the Point Conception break that Doyen found, which would have been down here. In fact, our guys here along the Santa Barbara coast and those here further north up to Big Sur actually go with the southern clade, and the stuff from Monterey north, including some of those other things that we've sampled, are really quite different. And we have looked at this a little bit more carefully with analysis of molecular variants, or AMOVA. Monterey Bay has been found to be a break in a lot of things, both in the marine environment and some of the inner coast ranges. So we did include some of our northern samples in this. And really, we were looking at how much variation was explained by these breaks between large groups. So if we separated these into northern-southern populations at Monterey Bay, we explained about 65% of the among group variation there. If we break it a little bit further south at Big Sur, so that the Monterey Bay populations are all included with the northern group, that explains over 90% of the among group variation. And the Point Conception break, only a relatively small amount. So it's clear that the major discontinuity, at least in mitochondrial DNA, is up here at Big Sur, and really doesn't correspond to the morphological break that John found. So that's pretty interesting. And I mean, you can go back and look at this and say it makes sense in that this is the Santa Lucia Mountains here really come right down to the ocean, and there's very little beach in this stretch just south of Big Sur. So it makes sense that there's a geographic break there, but why the morphology doesn't correspond to that is really an interesting question. I meant to circle that. So I'm going to leave the phylogeography there. There's a lot more to talk about there, and we've got a couple of papers coming out that I'm sure you'll all eagerly look forward to. But I do want to move on here and talk about some of the taxonomic diversity. And I'm going to be going through this a lot more quickly because, honestly, we're getting into some of my limits of knowledge here. I've really been learning a lot of this as I go, but I will be adding some comments on some of my observations of these various things that I've made as I was collecting them. So the overall fauna in California, we have 470 described species and 104 genera, map out very unevenly to subfamilies, but I presume that this more or less represents the diversity of these groups on a more global scale. And I have tried to modernize all of this to Pat Bouchard's most recent classification. I know there's still some stability issues there, but you'll see some names that are probably more familiar to me because that's what I've focused on than they are to you. So our big five genera in California are Helops, which has got 20 species, and probably more than that. There's a lot of very distinct forms of this thing. Metaponium, probably a fair number of synonyms still embedded there. Stenomorpha, I know Fran's going to sort that out very soon, and there may be more, there may be less. I'm sure she'd like to see them move up the ranking a little bit. Coniontus with 36 species, and of course the big one is Eleodes with 65. And possibly many more. There's a lot of really distinct forms of Eleodes here as well. So I'm going to go through these subfamily by subfamily relatively quickly. Alaculines, 33 species, and I've picked out several diurnal things here that you can find beating flowers, shrubs, and chaparral have all of these things. They seem to be feeding on pollen. There are also some nocturnal alaculines and some nice myrmecophiles in some of these groups that they'll often come to light. Diaporines, relatively small group in California, but really quite a lot of morphological diversity. We have some beach things, Phalaria and Phalaromela, that are really quite common. Cineus is a relatively common thing in Southern California. It's relatively flat if you haven't seen this. And they go down into the bases of yuccas, and you can find them in rotting stems there. They'll also come to light. Platydeme is a real common thing in pine forests under bark, but it also gets down to lower elevations and other kinds of trees. We do have a number of Corticius and some other things. And actually, I remembered last night after talking to Warren that Pentaphyllus belongs here too. It didn't make my list, but we do have a species of that in California. Lagrians, a relatively depauperate fauna, and really this kind of represents that southeastern incursion of subtropical things. We have a few species of Statira, some Shadoporus, possibly Adelonia. There's some ambiguous old records. I've actually never collected any members of this group myself. We have a single Phrenapetine, Clamoris americana, and this is found under bark in the northern part of the state. Doesn't get down as far as Santa Barbara, so I haven't seen this too often. And lots of Pimeliines and some incredible diversity here, including some of my very favorite things, myrmecophiles. So this is a group that I've kind of gravitated towards. Ancoma is an endemic here in California, and it's kind of a facultative myrmecophile. I have found them out just wandering around freely, but in places where I've found dense ant colonies, they tend to be a little bit more common. And I want to go on to a little digression into Alaudes, which is a group that I really like, and in fact have joined forces with Rolf Albu to try to revise over the coming year. It's a relatively small group with five described species. We've got a couple of new ones, and the diversity doesn't really strike you here so much, but there's a lot of variation in the types of scales and the arrangement of scales. And we've been looking at these in a lot of detail with SEM and finding some really interesting characteristics. In a lot of the older literature, these guys are considered to be blind. They do, in fact, have a little single omatidium in there, but that's been seen before. And lots of nice characters of the mouth parts. Some of them have a little hole right down here, and this is sort of the trichome region, or you know, your characteristic myrmecophile structure, and that hole hadn't been seen before, and it's not really clear what that's doing. So over the next year, you'll see a lot more coming out on these things. Lots more Pimeliines, and I know I'm starting to run short on time, so I'm going to go through these very quickly. You see a lot of these guys out in the desert, Adrodes, there's a couple of species that you find in sand dunes to the west. The Stenocines are some very interesting things. Ariosciasis is quite diverse out here. Also, sometimes myrmecophile, probably not always. We have Typhlosecchus, which is a soil thing. Has a few little omatidia, but is basically a subterranean thing. It's flightless, just about a millimeter and a half long. A really, really cute little thing. Stenochiines, or the old coelometapines. We have a diverse fauna. These tend to be big and pretty charismatic. Several species of Coelocnemus and Cybdelus you find under bark, especially in coastal regions, but other places as well. And for you easterners, we do have Alabates pennsylvanicus out here. And it's not really clear. I said introduced here at the time, but just about a week before the talk, I was reading back through Fall's 1901 Coleoptera of Southern California, and he had records of it from the Sierra Nevada 100 years ago. So it's possible that it's one of these real widespread coast-to-coast things. It could have been a real old introduction, but that seems a little unlikely. Tenebrionines, and I've lumped the Bolotophagines in here. We don't have any really nice horned ones like the eastern one, but we do have several species in Eleates and Megaleates. Apocrypha is a little anthysid-like soil or leaf-letter-dwelling thing, and that's an endemic. The Eulabines, most of these are endemic to California. I think Apanteus is a little bit more widespread, but have a couple of other species of Apsina as well. Lots of Blapsdinus, lots of Helops, which I think would be a great group to try to work up out here. Clearly some new ones, and just about finished up here. I was going to relate an interesting Tenebrio story very quickly. I got some samples from some vertebrate biologists, and they were turning up a lot of these in some very pristine coastal areas. And I was curious, so I asked them, what are those sites like? And it turns out that they were putting mealworms in their traps for their vertebrates to eat, and didn't think that this might be some kind of very confusing contaminant. This is, of course, an introduced thing, and we would not want it in our coastal environments. So, in conclusion, if you like Tenebrionids, which you all do, and I'm coming to, California really is a great place to be. A very rich fauna. They've diversified in all kinds of different environments. Obviously, there's a lot of very interesting, intraspecific things going on that need to be looked at in more detail, and still lots of taxonomic challenges that need to be met. So a lot of good work still to be done. So I'd like to thank lots of folks for helping contribute samples for the phylogeographic work. Especially like to thank Rolf Albu for helping me straighten out the taxonomy, get our collection straightened out, and really brought me up to speed on this group. The work was supported by the National Science Foundation, the Schlinger Foundation, and I definitely want to plug our website at sbnature.org/calbeetles, where you can see lots more pictures and distributions. And thanks, Fran and Katie, for inviting me. I really did enjoy it.